You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 338 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live from Phillips Arena on this fine Tuesday evening as the Atlanta Hawks got a 108-82 victory over the Memphis Grizzlies in the spot. And obviously, you know, the 26-point margin of victory was a little bit surprising for Atlanta as they were favored in this game, which is a kind of a rarity this season. The Hawks have had some real success against the Western Conference in recent days, but, you know, 26-point blowout victory and a 34-point lead in the fourth quarter for Atlanta, so we'll have plenty of time to talk about that game. But with that said, because it was a blowout, we'll probably do a little bit less on the game than we normally would, and we have other stuff to fill in because the trade deadline is less than 48 hours away. So we'll start there. Chris Mannix of Yahoo Sports reported on Tuesday morning that a lot of players on the Hawks roster are available in trade. That, of course, is not exactly a new development, as there's been plenty of speculation and reporting over the last couple of days and really weeks and months about the Hawks kind of having something of a fire sale if they are able to execute some moves. But with that said, Mannix was the first person that I've seen that included Taurean Prince specifically by name in the reporting. It is important to note that Mannix did not say that the Hawks were trying to trade Prince or anything like that. You know, guys being available in trade does not mean that the Hawks are looking to trade him openly and like marketing around the league. With that said, the report from Mannix did note that Prince is generating interest on the market, and that's something that was I wrote about a little bit on Peachtree Hoops on Tuesday. And listen, that's not exactly a big surprise to me. I think Prince is a very solid building block piece for the Hawks. If you had to pick a player outside of John Collins that would have been the best asset on the roster, it probably would be Prince because he's on a rookie contract. You know, he's not that great of a player at this moment in time, but he's a useful future piece. He's only 23 years old. With that said, I think I was a little bit flabbergasted by some of the brushback and sort of the blowback of that piece that I even wrote in the reporting from Mannix. A lot of Hawks fans sort of incredulous that the Hawks would even listen on Taurean Prince. And I have to say, I don't really understand that point of view. You know, Prince, again, is a very nice asset, was a lottery pick, you know, less than 2 years ago. At the same time, it's not as if Prince is going to be a star player in the NBA. And honestly, his defensive capabilities have been kind of disappointing at this point in time. Offensively, he's probably ahead of where I thought he'd be at this point. But defensively, he is far behind that. So there is obviously some reason to believe that the Hawks would like to keep Taurean Prince, but it also should be noted that, you know, Travis Schlenk did not draft Taurean Prince. So we kind of don't know how he feels about Prince at this juncture. There have been highs, there have been lows. He's very bad in January in general, and then we saw him actually have a couple of nice games to begin February. But still, it's one of those things where with Prince, we kind of don't know how the Hawks actually feel about him, much less the rest of the league. So I would encourage people to sort of take a deep breath on that kind of thing. Just because a guy is reported that there is interest or that a guy is available on the market does not mean that they're going to be traded. I would still wager, if you ask me to bet one way or the other, that he would not be traded. Much like that's kind of how I feel about most of the roster at this point in time, at least between now and Thursday. With that said, it would not blow me away if the Hawks pull the trigger on Taurean, just because, you know, again, Schlenk does not have a public opinion of him necessarily, aside from, you know, he didn't draft him. He wasn't the one that scouted him, all that fun stuff. And the fact that no one on this roster is untouchable. The closest thing to that, of course, would be Collins. But I think Prince is significantly behind Collins in terms of the untouchability rankings. And we'll keep an eye on that, obviously, for sure. Then the actual headliner of the sort of, quote, more real news would be that Marco Bellinelli was held out of the game on Tuesday against the Grizzlies. That came to light right before tip-off. Michael Cunningham, the AJC, reported that from the Hawks, and the Hawks later confirmed that to me and others, that they were holding Bellinelli out of the game specifically because of trade discussions. Mark Stein reported during the game that the Hawks have told Marco Bellinelli that he is on course to be traded before the deadline. That's a quote from Stein on Twitter. And apparently the Hawks are still weighing their options in terms of where they're actually going to trade him to, but apparently multiple teams are interested according to reports there. So the Hawks doing the smart thing, in my opinion, is sort of holding him out, risking, sort of avoiding the risk of an injury for a guy who is a little bit older and has had some things in the past. You know, earlier this season, he was held out of the lineup in the preseason and all that stuff. So, you know, thinking that he's healthy now, there's every reason for the Hawks to be sort of cautious with Bellinelli. With that said, I can't imagine it's going to be a whole lot of return for Bellinelli. I'm expecting it to be a second-round pick, something like that, or maybe like a fringe asset. So anything you can get from him at this point is probably a win. I think if there's anybody on the roster that will be a buyout candidate after the fact, it would be Bellinelli. So, you know, the Hawks are being proactive here and holding him out, but we'll see what happens between now and the deadline. But that would be the whole, that's sort of the big story in terms of actual physical, tangible stuff, is that Bellinelli was held out of the game. He was only a Hawks, is only a healthy Hawk that did not play on Tuesday, and obviously would have been out there because it was a blowout. But, you know, there's every reason to hold on to him at this point in time and have him not play basketball between now and Thursday. The next game for the Hawks is after the deadline on Thursday night in Orlando, so no risk there. If he's still on the roster, you expect him to probably suit up, and perhaps there'll be some buyout discussions, of course. But until then, no basketball to be played. So this is kind of a one-and-done kind of thing for Bellinelli to not be in the lineup, and that was the reason why. Next on the agenda in terms of trades would be Ursula Nesova. There's a lot of buzz on him. Mark Stein also reported that there is, quote, considerable trade interest in Hawks forward Ursula Ilyasova, but Ilyasova can veto any trade as a one-year bird, and to this point, he has shown little interest in relocating, end quote. So we talked about this before on the podcast, but Ilyasova can veto any trade because he's only on a one-year contract, and he has the bird rights to do so. So one of those things where it's sort of a hiccup in the CBA where Ilyasova can kind of direct traffic here. You would think from the outside looking in that Ilyasova, because he's on a bad team right now, would probably like to get out. But at the same time, the Hawks are playing him a lot. He's angling for his next contract. Probably he might likely in Atlanta, for instance. There could be several reasons why he would want to stick around. Also, Danny LaRue, friend of the program, actually mentioned on Twitter, and I thought this was a good idea, it wasn't as if he was reporting this, but sort of a thought bubble from Danny, that Ilyasova would have some reason to veto the trade and then ask for a buyout after the deadline so that he could then choose his destination, whereas the Hawks could send him somewhere else if he was being traded. Of course, that's, for all the no-trade clause kind of stuff around sports, Ilyasova's not the kind of guy that you probably would think about when you think about no-trade clauses, but at the same time, the one-year contract sort of gives him one, so it's one of those things where he's exercising that apparently, and there's no reason to be upset about him doing that. It's one of those things where that's under his contract, so he's allowed to do that, and he's allowed to direct the way his the rest of his contract goes. If he can get bought out for the Hawks for most of his money and then double up somewhere else, also he has every reason to hope he would do that. So no hate on Ilyasova whatsoever, but it's something to keep an eye on for sure. There's no way for Ursan to be traded and also retain his bird rights, which is important as well. So if he wants to keep those bird rights, which I can't imagine would be a huge thing for him, the team that would be trading for him would only have his non-bird rights, so they can only pay him up to 120% of the $6 million that he's making this year if they were trying to go over the cap to sign him. So without getting too deep into that, Ilyasova might have plenty of reasons to not want to be traded, even if the casual outsider on look there would indicate that, you know, why wouldn't he want to leave? There are a couple of reasons why he wouldn't want to leave, and even if he does want to leave, there's also reasons why he might veto a trade in order to potentially seek some freedom on his own to be able to choose the team. So keep an eye on that. It doesn't mean that Ilyasova will definitely veto any trade that comes across his desk, quote unquote, but at the same time, if you were Ilyasova and you didn't want to go somewhere, you could certainly say no, and looks like he might be able to do that between now and Thursday. So as of right now, that's going to be all the deadline talk we have on this podcast. As you might imagine, there'll probably be something between now and tomorrow, and that'll be the focus of our Thursday pod. And then, of course, if the Hawks make a big splash, we'll definitely have a trade podcast. After that, if the Hawks are kind of quiet or maybe only have a Bellinelli trade, we'll definitely still do a pod for Friday. But the Hawks also have a game on Thursday night, so we'll probably be another one of those crossover podcasts between now and then. Moving on to the game, because there actually was one that took place on this fine evening, and the Hawks won, obviously, as we talked about at the beginning of the podcast. This is a breezy win. The Grizzlies were very, very bad in this game, and that's something that has to be said, because the Hawks played reasonably well here, and there was a lot of things to be positive about after the game. A lot of players were positive, a lot of coaches were positive. At the same time, Memphis kind of just was brutal, and that has to be said. You know, the Grizzlies got off to a brutal start, kind of never recovered. The Grizzlies shot 6 of 20 from the floor in the first quarter and 0 of 5 from 3. The Hawks actually were leading by 7 despite shooting 0 of 6 from 3 in the first quarter, and Torrey Prince was 0 of 5. In the first half of this game, the Hawks had a 71.7 defensive rating, which means Memphis could not score basically the entire first half, really the entire game, is the entire sort of the full game proxy there was the as the Grizzlies having an 84 offensive rating and shooting 43% from the floor, 18% from three, and a comical 27 turnovers from the Grizzlies. And it, honestly, it was even worse than that. They had 23 at the end of the third quarter, and they kind of just calmed down in the fourth, but they were on pace for more than 30 at one point, and that would have been absolutely brutal by all accounts. You know, the Hawks got the lead up to 32 in the third and 34 in the fourth, and the Grizzlies had 54 points after three quarters to go on with 23 turnovers, which is not what you want to see, obviously. So without getting too deep into the things in terms of the play-by-play, because there really wasn't much to uncover there, this is a dominant effort from the Hawks from start to finish. The Grizzlies only led once, and it was within the first few minutes of the game, and the Hawks kind of ran away and hid from there, even though I didn't think the Hawks played that well. Honestly, this is definitely more about the Grizzlies sort of laying an egg, but Atlanta did take advantage of it, and they should be credited for that. The starting lineup in this game was the same as it has always been for a while now. Dennis Schroeder was the leading scorer for the Hawks. 22 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds for Dennis. I thought he played pretty well here. Plus 27 in his 25 minutes of play. 9 of 15 from the floor. 1 of 3 from 3 and 3 of 3 from the free throw line. You know, Dennis kind of got wherever he wanted to go. Memphis' defense was bad in this game in general. And the Hawks had a 110 offensive rating, which is pretty darn good for this Hawks team. And Dennis was a big part of that. Kent Bazemore, pretty quiet night. 10 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals. He wasn't bad at all, obviously. You know, plus 20 defensively, did his job, and even he didn't shoot the ball that well, 3 of 9 from the floor. But you know, other than that, Bass played pretty well. Other things to hit on here, as we probably will not go through every single player because there's no reason to do that in a 30-point blowout in which guys were not really in their normal roles. Miles Plumlee had a couple of nice moments, did have 6 turnovers, which is pretty crazy to consider on a night where he had basically no usage at all. 19 minutes, 6 turnovers, is really bad for Miles. Torian Prince was actually kind of rough offensively. 1 of 8 from the floor, 0 of 4 from 3, including that was 0 of 5 in the first half. So a pretty quiet night from him after a couple of nice outings recently offensively. And Ursula Anisova playing through it. He was with Bellinelli on the sideline. Anisova was on the court on this night, despite the trade rumors that they're out there with him, and he played reasonably well in 19 minutes, but had 8 points and 4 rebounds for Ursan. Off the bench, John Collins was the bright spot, 15 points and 10 rebounds. Bud had some positive things to say about both Collins and Dorsey. After the game, he was asked about both players and kind of gave a pretty positive report, but a plus 5 for John and a double-double, the only double-double by any player in the entire game. Oh, sorry, that's not true. Ivan Rabb off the bench for the Grizzlies had a double-double, but Collins played very well. Mike Muscala, a pretty quiet night, but was reasonably effective. Luke Babbitt had his first minutes in quite a while with 6 points in 12 minutes off the bench in the fourth quarter. Dwayne Dedmon had a really nice night. He was perfect in the first half. He finished the game with 11 points on only 6 shot attempts. I thought he played very well. Isaiah Taylor had some real run because of Bellinelli's absence, so he actually got some second quarter minutes, first half minutes for Isaiah. I thought he was pretty decent in this spot. Malcolm Delaney, pretty quiet night. Honestly, there was no reason to go back to him with all the miles on his tires, so they kept him out of the game in the second half. And finally, Tyler Dorsey, 10 points and 7 assists to, he actually led the entire game in assists, which is not something you would see from Tyler Dorsey normally. I thought he played very well here. Bud was, again, complimentary of him. 4 of 10 from the floor, nothing to be excited about necessarily, but the way that he playmaked in this game, that's not really a word, but, you know, his playmaking responsibilities were pretty strong. And in general, I thought Tyler played very well. So this would have been a very short podcast normally without all the trade stuff, just because of the fact that there is nothing to discuss, honestly, in terms of game theory or strategy or, you know, highs and lows. Pretty much everybody on the roster played at least reasonably well. I didn't think anybody played poorly outside of maybe Torian Prince had a subpar game, but everybody else, I guess Miles Plumlee was Miles Plumlee, but you know, the entire bench was positive in terms of their baseline, and the Grizzlies were terrible from start to finish. By the way, just one note, if you were a general NBA fan, it was kind of sad to see Marc Gasol play the way that he did in this game. Only 19 minutes, 8.6 rebounds, but, you know, Gasol kind of gave up defensively, honestly. I thought he was pretty bad. He kind of allowed Dennis Schroeder to get wherever he wanted to in that first half and pretty much pulled the plug on himself. He was, of course, the only available player for Memphis that's really sort of noteworthy on an NBA-wide scale. There's some guys I like on this team, like Jermichael Green and James Ennis, but, you know, it's basically just Gasol and a bunch of supporting players, to be kind, at this point. But Gasol's clearly taking a step back, and that was a little bit disappointing to see in person for the first time this season because, you know, Memphis, that's their only trip to Atlanta. So if you are a Memphis Grizzlies fan in Atlanta, I'm sorry you had to see this one for their one trip. You know, good friend of the program, Tyler Jones, hails from Memphis, so I don't think he was in the building. I would have known if he was here, but at the same time, pretty brutal for Memphis fans that made the trip down to Atlanta for this one. But, you know, I digress. The Hawks played well, the Grizzlies did not, and the Hawks won by 26 points as a result of that combination. So with that said, I expect some more trade stuff to be flying. I would be stunned if the Hawks didn't make a move between now and Thursday. Even if it's just Marco Bellinelli, that one seems now pretty safe to assume he won't be on the roster, and Ilyasova might be a buyout candidate if he decides to hold through and veto any trade. So there's some Dedmon stuff out there, of course. There's some Bazemore and Schroeder stuff, even though there's not really a whole lot of interest there. And in fact, every single national writer that I've seen mention Dennis Schroeder basically said that there isn't any NBA interest in terms of another team. It's not as if he's this terrible player, but at the same time, there's not seem to be anybody looking to add Dennis for the next 3 years plus. So we'll keep an eye on that. But I'd be pretty surprised if he moved. Bazemore seems to be kind of fading in the discussion. So a lot of Bellinelli, a lot of Ilyasova, maybe some Dedmon and some other, maybe something crazy off the wall. But between now and Thursday, we'll have plenty to talk about. So please stay tuned for the podcast. I'm coming back tomorrow. We'll definitely be here. Subscribe to the pod. Tell your friends. And we'll see you guys tomorrow.